Welcome to MoneyMD, where the money doctors are in the house. We're giving out prescriptions for better financial health and making smart decisions with your money. We give common sense solutions to your complex problems. And now, here are the doctors.
Well, Ryan, it has been a fresh start to the spring. It's April.
It is April.
And the pollen is dying down, hopefully.
Yeah, it's died down. It's looking green out there. A lot less of the yellow stuff.
A lot yes.
Allergies are still killing us, but
yeah,
hey,
that's right. But you know, with pollen comes flowers and beautiful scenery, and we've got the Masters coming up coming week.
Big deal in this town, ain't it?
Big deal. That's right, man. What about you? What's going on with you? What's new in your life?
You know, man, just we're living life. Got a kid in the house.
Yes. So I hear.
A little dude, as I call him, to the public. But he's a five-year-old boy, foster child, and that has been quite the adjustment for all of us, and he's doing really well. And, yeah, just trying to learn to be a parent to a five-year-old last month.
A month now. I know you've been talking about it almost every day at work, and it's been neat to see the progression from Ryan, not a dad, to now Ryan, a dad, a foster dad. And I mean, it's been cool, just encouraging to hear you and Sarah, how you've been walking through this season with him. It's been really neat.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you got it figured out now, right?
Yeah, I can call me if you need parenting advice. I've got it.
Yeah, that's not, right. That's exciting.
I need more advice from other people. So it's good. It's just an adjustment for everybody. He's doing really well. A lot of improvement. Mm. And, yeah, he's a sweet boy.
That's good, man. That's good. Well, we're glad to have you on the show. Glad to do the show with you, Ryan, one of my best friends, man. It's been fun over the last, I guess, 5 or 6 years. We've been working together now. And
yeah, man.
Yeah, always a pleasure. But like I said, good time of the year with Masters, with springtime, with, coming up to summer with kids, vacations, and it's just a good time of the year for a lot of people. And glad to have you on the show.
Wait,
if you're listening.
Did you get fooled yesterday on April Fool's?
Did I get fooled? So, yeah, we're recording this on Tuesday the 2nd. Did I get fooled yesterday? I don't think I did.
I don't think anyone
tried to pull anything on me.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
Did you fool anyone?
No, I just completely forgot that was yesterday. Okay. That's my life now. I was like, oh, yeah, that's today.
Yeah.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, with the child, I'm sure it adds to that complexity. But no, I didn't get to do that. It was first April Fool's married. I guess I could have.
Yeah, you could have done
it. Could have utilized that, but
yeah,
not quite. But anyways, by the way, I'm Matthew Travis. I'm a certified financial planner and have been here at the firm for coming up on 6 years now.
My goodness. Wow. Time flies.
Years, that's right.
And I'm Ryan Borders. I'm also a certified financial planner. I'm also a Dave Ramsey SmartVestor Pro.
Yeah, that's right. And we have an exciting show lined up for today. I'm talking about a couple articles. The first article we'll be going through is from Charles Schwab. And so they also produce educational materials. And so sometimes we pull articles from there. And this is 6 financial planning tips for new parents. I found this one interesting. And Ryan, I thought this would be interesting for you as well, just in this new season and for a lot of listeners. But that's going to be our first article.
Yeah, the next is a college degree worth the cost? So this comes from a report we're going to go over. It's from the New York Times. Just, hey, is a college degree worth it? And yeah, it'll be interesting to walk through the answers. It's not a, one answer. It's kind of, in some cases it is, and some cases it's not.
Yeah. But we're excited to have you listening to us today on our weekly show. We're up every week on Friday afternoon, so you can find our show on our website through moneymd.net or on Spotify or other streaming services or anywhere you can listen to us from anywhere in the world. You can also check us out on our website at moneymd.net, where you can link to us and ask us your questions and also find previous shows. So first, we're going to start off with the financial fact of the week.
Okay.
Ryan, can you tackle that one?
I can, yeah. So taxes. So taxpayers who choose to file to, extension for their taxes don't need to give the IRS any explanation as to why they want an extension. So you don't got to tell them why. You can just do it.
Sure.
But keep this in mind, that the extension only gives you more time to file your federal income tax return. You still must pay all your taxes owed for 2023 by April 15th deadline, so coming up.
Wow.
Otherwise, you may be hit with a failure to pay penalty. So if you're in the group that you and you think you still owe the IRS money from, you know, last year, estimate how much and send your payment by the 15th. Don't make that mistake, because that could be bad. So that comes from CNN.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Yeah, so that's an interesting fact. If you do file an extension, if you've been doing it, then I'm sure you're familiar with that. But, you know, if this is your first time, make sure you pay that. Even if you file later, you have to pay that up front. So, yeah, interesting fact of the week. And that leads us into our first article, Ryan. And again, this is from Charles Schwab, and it's talking about kids and talking about planning and talking about parents and the conversations they have. And so we'll jump into that now. I don't personally have any children, but I hear that children are expensive. And for most new parents, focusing on the big picture may not be easy. You're sleep deprived. Maybe you're juggling naps and feeding schedules. Maybe it's two parents working. Maybe it's one parent working. You know, you're excited about this new little person in your life, Ryan. I know you've experienced some of this with, you know, with the little guy in your house in the last month. You know, it's exciting, but it's also difficult. But, you know, there's milestones that are coming up on the horizon. And, you know, our thought is, as financial planners, is, you know, wanting to prepare for them while also keeping your own finances on track. So here's six tips for new parents with new kids.
Yeah, the first is consider insurance, both life and disability. Adequate health insurance is crucial, but you'll also want to consider life and disability insurance as well. Life insurance can help protect your growing family by making sure that the financial resources are available, you know, to them if you're no longer there. So not a fun topic, but an important one, while also providing peace of mind for your spouse and loved ones while you're alive. So it's a good thing to have. The payout from a policy could potentially cover things you'd like your survivors to have, such as a paid-off mortgage, school tuition, a future wedding for your child. Disability insurance, on the other hand, can be major help if one or both parents becomes unable to work due to severe illness or injury. While you may have, you know, employer-provided disability insurance, make sure that it will be enough to cover essential expenses like your mortgage, debt, child care, and household expenses for a reasonable length of time. You may want to consider supplementing your existing coverage with an individual policy or using an individual policy instead to provide more customized coverage for your needs. So, you know, while you shop around, keep in mind that some policies may pay benefits only if you can't perform any work at all, rather than being unable to do specific types of work that you currently do. So just think through that. It's important. You're more likely to become disabled than to die. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't have adequate disability insurance. And one thing when I saw that was the child care expenses. As your new parent, and especially if you're paying for child care, it is very expensive. And that's, so there's a lot of unexpected costs. So it's good to think through that and review that.
Yeah, that's really good. The second one is to increase your emergency fund. Having a child raises the stakes for this rainy day planning. You'll want to make sure that you can keep your household running smoothly in the event of job loss, illness, or a large unexpected expense. As a rule of thumb, most financial experts, and we would agree, would recommend keeping 3 to 6 months worth of essential living expenses available for emergencies. And this can, this money doesn't have to be in a single account, but can be spread between interest-bearing checking accounts or money markets. You know, currently we're seeing high-yield savings accounts online offering over 4%. You know, that's a good option for emergency funds. But the point is, you know, really just to keep money set aside for an emergency. This is especially important for single income families. Without this, if an unforeseen situation arises, debt is normally the way people get through, which can leave you in a bad spot for the long run. And we see this, Ryan, right? I mean, when people don't have emergency funds and something happens, you know, an HVAC system goes out, that's, you know, a common one, or you have a medical bill that the insurance doesn't cover and you've got $10,000 in debt and then that has interest payments and you can't pay that off. It can be a cycle that's very difficult to get out of. So that emergency fund is a good thing to have when thinking through, you know, family planning.
Yeah, the third is take advantage of tax breaks. For many working parents, childcare can be expensive as a second car payment or mortgage. I mean, it's, like I said, it's very expensive. Tax breaks can help at least a little bit. In 2023, if you meet certain criteria, the child and dependent care credit can cover up to 35% of eligible expenses depending on your income. However, the maximum credit is just over $1,000 for one child and about $2,100 for two. A flexible spending account, FSA, is another option. You know, this is an employer-sponsored program that allows you to set aside about $5,000 per year tax-free for qualified child care expenses for couples filing jointly with one or more dependents. You typically enroll in or renew your election in your dependent care FSA through your employer during your open enrollment period each year. But certain changes in status for qualifying events during the year, like having a baby, allow you to make changes. So just talk to your HR about that. See what options are there to help save some money.
Yeah, that's right. And these HR administrators can tell you when employees in your organization can enroll. So they can really, like you're saying, Ryan, can hold your hand. You can use this dependent care FSA to pay for eligible pre-K child care expenses tax-free, including nursery school, preschool or similar programs below the level of kindergarten. Expenses to attend kindergarten or higher grade are not eligible for FSA expenses. But, you know, there's certain rules around these that, you know, really, again, talking with your HR department and looking more into the FSA can be very good. Generally speaking, high income families will benefit more from an FSA than from the child and dependent care credit. You cannot use them both. It's an either or. But a potential drawback is that the IRS does require money that's contributed to an FSA to be spent during the plan year. And if it's not used, then they it can be forfeited. So, you know, again, an FSA, you know, and then the child and dependent care credit can be two things just to look into when you're thinking through child care. For your child.
Yeah, use it or lose it.
Yeah, that's right. So that's an FSA. This is different from an HSA.
Correct.
But an FSA is specifically for the child care credit.
Yeah. Yeah, the next number four is start saving for college now. By the time a child is born today, packs their bags for college, and we're about to talk about college, by the way, 4 years of tuition and fees, including room and board, is projected to be roughly $242,000 at a public university, in-state resident. Blah. Yes. Yeah.
So
the earlier you begin saving, the better off you'll be. For example, if you begin contributing $500 per month for college savings at birth, assuming a 5.8 rate of return. Wow, interesting. Your savings fund would be around $213,000 by the time your child reaches age 17. If you postpone saving until your child is 10 years old, your savings fund will cover roughly around $78,000 of your child's costs. This being said, you may also decide to pay for all of college, not all of college, but a portion of it. There's no right or wrong answer, you know, how to save for that. We're going to talk about, you know, education and some ideas we have as well on if it's worth it. Because, yeah, college is getting expensive and sometimes people spend way too much on it. But, yeah, you want to start saving for it now, especially if it's important to you.
That's right. This fifth one is to prioritize retirement savings. If you must choose between saving for college and saving for retirement, our opinion typically is to save for retirement. Your child will likely have more than one way to pay for college, including scholarships, loans, and grants. But you can't make up for a loss of retirement savings. You can't take out a loan for retirement. I guess you can, which is debt, but we obviously don't recommend that. We typically recommend using money in a priority fashion, meaning you set goals and you put money towards those goals with the highest priority being at the top and then the subsequent goals beneath. Saving 15% for retirement can generally replace an income for those who start saving early in their career. So this is not saying we idolize retirement or we think that, you know, we were created just to have a lot of money and then to stop working. This is saying that retirement planning and savings is we typically draw an income throughout our lifetime from our jobs. And at some point, if you decide you want to stop, the retirement savings can then generate an income to you that then you can spend your time doing different things like volunteering or serving or doing something with less of an income that you really enjoy or that's good for your community. So, you know, retirement savings is a big part of planning that we do want to prioritize, you know, in the planning process.
Yeah, the final number six, update your estate planning documents. One of the things that a will does is allow you to indicate who you would like to serve as a guardian for your child if something happens and you're not there. So very important. We talk about this a lot with clients. Have a conversation with an attorney to make sure other parts of your estate plan are in order, including things like the powers of attorney for financial and healthcare decisions and up-to-date beneficiary designations. An attorney can help, you know, just determine, you know, if setting up a trust makes sense for your situation and goals. So it's important to at least have a will there. Make sure you have that in place because you want to dictate who takes care of the kids if something happens to both of you.
Yeah, that's great. And again, this is, you know, a rather short article from Schwab. The point of all this is really to have conversations with either your spouse or someone you trust about planning, you know, if you are thinking about having a child or, you know, if you do currently have a child or children. This is so important to think through this for your family.
Absolutely. Good article.
That's right. All right. And that leads us into the question of the week. This is a question, Ryan, honestly, we get quite a lot now, and I'm going to let you tackle this first and we can talk through it. But the question is this: why would I not invest all of my money in an S&P 500 fund? It's outperformed everything or most things over the last 10 years. Ryan, what would you say to that?
That is, where do we begin, Matthew? That's a good question. Yeah, S&P 500's had a great run and it looks great, but there's a few things you got to be very cautious about. So we can first talk about diversification. It's only 500 stocks, and the majority of the run of this S&P 500 over the last 10 years has only been very few stocks. About 5 to 7 of the stocks have really taken most of the weight.
Say that again. You said, yeah, 5 to 7. I think that's a good point.
5 to 7 stocks are the ones that are really leading most of the charge and its growth.
Within the S&P 500.
Within the S&P 500.
Yeah.
So one, okay, that's very risky. Yeah, and then here, other things to think through. You know, you want to be diversified with thousands of stocks across many different markets, not just one section. So the S&P 500 is also just one small section of the stock market. You want to own things like small stocks, value stocks. You want to own international stocks because, you know what, the S&P 500 has not always been the leading index and section of the market. So there's been other decades that have really struggled. That would be a retirement plan killer. So think of the lost decade. We talk about 1999. Through that decade, starting in 99, it averaged around negative 1% for that whole decade, which would, people would not be asking that question during that decade.
Right.
And so sometimes people just think, hey, you know, 10 years, it sounds like a long time, but when it comes to investing, markets, and planning, it's not.
Hmm.
And it's just, yeah, not a wise decision to keep it all there, even though right now it feels like it is.
Yeah, that's right, Ryan. And just to reiterate, I mean, it is tempting to look back and say, man, for the last 12 years, if I had just been in the S&P 500, then my accounts would have been here and I would have been able to do this amount of stuff with it. But the reality is, like you said, these things go in cycles. And we see that in 2012, you would not have wanted to be in the S&P 500 if you look back on the last 10 years of performance because of how poorly it had performed. And so if we're just chasing returns and saying, man, if I just am in this one sector for these next 10 years, then I'm going to bank all my money. There's a lot of risk in that. And so we see that a proven way to build wealth long term is to be very diversified. And it's not fun because a diversified portfolio, by definition, can never be on top because we have a little sliver of every sector. But also, by definition, it's not on the bottom because we have a little piece of what's done well and a little piece of what's underperformed because we see that these go in cycles. So it is hard to be disciplined with investing, but that's definitely what we would encourage clients to do.
Yeah, this is always a tough one because, like, hindsight's always 20/20, and it just, at the end of the day, it's very hard to predict markets. It's very hard to figure out when to get in and to get out of certain areas if you're trying to play that game. And yeah, it's just too much risk. You need, when it comes to life money, retirement money that needs to be there, you need to have a steady plan in place, be broadly diversified in funds and sections that have a proven track record and have academic research behind it. But you know, you could play this game with everything. You know, why not Bitcoin? Well, it's done really well over the last year. You know, you could play this game all the time And if you look at the academic research, people do not time markets well. People do not play that game and succeed well. Just got to be careful.
Yeah, good question. We do welcome those questions, so please keep asking them. We'll try to answer them on the show. And that leads us to our second topic, which is asking if a college degree is worth the cost.
Yeah, this is an interesting article from the New York Times. So, Matthew, most people go to college to improve their financial prospects, though there are other benefits to attending a post-secondary institution. But as an average cost of a four-year degree has risen, we just talked about that in your article. Even public universities, it's getting very, very expensive. So a new analysis from HEA Group, a research and consulting firm focused on college access and success, may help answer some questions to students and their families. You know, the study compares the median earnings of former college students 10 years after they enrolled with basic income benchmarks. So this is a study that's going to show us, hey, is it worth it? So the analysis found that a majority of the colleges exceed minimum economic measures for their graduates, like having a typical annual income that is more than that of a high school graduate with no higher education. So that's $32,000 per the federal scorecard. You look at their data. Still, more than 1,000 schools fell short of the threshold, though many of them were for-profit colleges concentrating on short-term credentials rather than traditional four-year degrees. That's like those ones you see online, a lot of ads for the for-profit universities.
Sure.
You can get this degree really fast, sure. And they do a lot of just like certificates rather than actual four-year degree. Mm. Seeing whether a college's former students are earning reasonable incomes, this comes from a guy from HEA, one of the guys doing the study. The group's can help weigh whether they want to cross some institutions off their list. So basically, we're gonna walk through what makes sense. Someone deciding between similar colleges, for example, can see the institution that has produced students with significantly higher incomes. While income isn't necessarily the only criterion to consider when comparing schools, it's a very good starting point. So I do want to emphasize this real quick before we get you into this. It's not all about money, but it's a very expensive thing to do, and you need to make sure it's worth the investment because a lot of people get in a lot of debt, and it kind of really screws up your adult life if you're just constantly paying off loans and in debt. So you got to be very careful. So that's what we're going to talk about. Yes, money's not the only reason you go to college, but you do need to think through it.
Yeah, that's very wise. The report that you just mentioned used data from the education department's college scorecard to assess the earnings of about 5 million former students who attended 3,900 institutions of higher education 10 years after they first enrolled. The analysis includes data for people who did not complete their degree as well. This report includes public colleges as well as private, nonprofit, and for-profit schools. The schools may offer non-degree certificates, associate degrees, and bachelor's degrees. The analysis found that schools where students earn less than their peers who never attended college were generally those offering non-degree certificates, like you were just mentioning, which can often be completed in 18 months or less. As at 71% of for-profit schools, a majority of students were earning less than high school graduates 10 years after enrolling, compared with 14% of public institutions. So again, you know, the four-year degrees, 14% are earning less than high school graduates, and 9% of private nonprofit schools were earning less than high school graduates. And this is a quote from one of the researchers. He says, college is indeed worth it, but paying for it can be substantially riskier depending on the type of school you attend and the credential you seek.
Exactly. So another report found that former students of for-profit colleges tend to experience more financial risk than those who attend similarly selective public colleges. Those risks include having to take on more debt for higher education, a greater likelihood of defaulting on student loans, and lower likelihood of finding a job. So you got to be careful. So a couple other things to think through. You know, the main thing on this, you just got to be very careful about how much you're, paying, even for, things like universities. that's the main thing we're going to kind of talk through here. The for-profit thing, you just got to be very careful. That's kind of the first point is, hey, be careful about that because it looks like people aren't really making more than a high school degree with that. Yeah. And you're taking on debt. You're taking on even time to get that done, even though you can do it in 18 months. It doesn't look like it's really worth it for that. So I would say first thing, be cautious of those. So the president of a career education colleges, Jason Altmeier, this is a trade group representing for-profit career colleges, said lumping together schools offering mainly short-term certificate programs with colleges offering four-year degrees didn't make sense. People who want to work in certain careers, you know, hairdressing, for instance, generally can't work in the field unless they earn a certificate. So he's saying, hey, that's not necessarily fair. You know, obviously, if you want to be a hairdresser, you do have to get a certificate from one of these for-profit schools. So you do have to keep that in mind. He also said that income data from for-profit certificate schools might be skewed by gender bias. You know, you can think through that. The main thing is, like, you know, if you want to be a hairdresser, yeah, you need to go to a for-profit school. I would just say, hey, just make sure it makes sense economically.
Yeah, and I think the main part of this article that's standing out is having conversations with people that are willing to push into your goals and dreams and can think realistically and ask hard questions to say, hey, this is awesome. I'm so glad you're thinking through this with what your passion is and what you desire. And also part of that conversation is, hey, what does it cost? How are you going to pay for this? What does that affect when you graduate if you have student loans? What does that mean for your life? And what does that affect for the next 10, 15, 20 years after you graduate? That's part of this conversation, is really just getting people who care about you and love you enough to ask you hard questions.
Correct. So yeah, going back, be careful about the for-profit, but yeah, there's sometimes it does make sense.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, again, you know, what we're discussing is it depends on the majors that, you know, where, what you get it. And if you get it in science, technology, engineering, nursing, typically these lead to higher salaries than majors in arts or humanities. When comparing the earnings after college, students and families shouldn't look to the data in a vacuum. You know, many schools where former students go to be top earners have programs focused on again, health sciences or technology or business, but that might not be what you want to study. And so, like you're saying at the start of this article, Ryan, it's not all about money, but it is definitely something to consider, you know, as you're thinking through college.
Yeah. So use it as one piece of information is the main thing. You know, students shouldn't rule out a college just because it wasn't at the pinnacle of the income list. Do ask questions though, like whether its career services office has helped with setting up internships and making alumni connections to assist you in finding a good paying job. I think a lot of students don't use those services well. We just, you know, a lot of students just don't know about it, or they're just not thinking about it. But yeah, you want to make sure, hey, does it have a good career center? Are there internships? Postgraduate income might matter more to students and families who had to get a loan for college. How much debt do they want to incur is the question asked here. That is something that needs to be taken into consideration. Some would say that benefits of college are not just financial. You know, that's true. There's a lot of things you can learn in college. So we're going to walk through some questions, you know, about college costs. But I would just kind of want to reiterate on this. Like, hey, yeah, it's not just about money. But you do need to think through what kind of degree you're getting. Is it going to be paying? You know, if you're going to take on $200,000 in debt, which we wouldn't suggest you do, we would suggest you find other ways to pay for college or go somewhere cheaper. But you need to make sure you can pay that back. And so if you're getting an English degree, does it make sense to go to a private school that's going to cost $200,000? Or maybe you go somewhere local and smaller and you take on $30,000 of debt, or you pay out of pocket? You know, those are the things you got to think through.
Yeah, and a hot question for you, Ryan. This is off script, but just curious, how do you feel about parents taking on a lot of debt for their kids' higher education? What are your thoughts generally? I know this is a very generalized question, but for that.
Parenting decisions are all personal and depending on your house and what's important to you. You got to be careful though, because, you know, those are the things that, like, parents taking on that debt can eat into your retirement and can really hurt your overall goals. You just got to be cautious. You know, I'm just very skeptical of, you know, certain, mainly my big skepticism is, hey, you can get a good degree at a local public university. You know, Georgia College here in Georgia is going to give you a great degree, and it's going to be significantly cheaper than a lot of the big schools, especially out of state. And that's not, you know, Georgia College compared to Georgia University, are you really going to get, you know, more job opportunities? Maybe a little bit, but I'm skeptical thinking that, is that going to really be a benefit to you, one or the other? As long as you do things like get a degree that's hireable, you do internships, you know, work hard. You know, those are the things that people are looking for.
Extracurriculars, outside, volunteering. And the other thing, the other caveat to all of this is, you know, there is also a stigma that you have to go to college to be successful. And maybe we ought to be encouraging more people of trade schools or
you
know, hands-on of electricians and plumbers and
please
welders and things that maybe people, it's just how God has gifted them. They're so good with their hands and carpentry or something, you know, to that extent. It's like, man, well, let's encourage that versus, you know, just saying that it's college is the way.
Well, the whole system you have 18-year-olds having to make pretty big decisions, and I don't necessarily know what the answer is to that. I'm glad I went to college and got my degree. Obviously, for us to be certified financial planners, you have to have a college degree, and so it does require it. But it's just, you just got to be careful. And I mean, the main thing you got to look for is just like, how much does it cost? Is it worth, you know, what type of degree you're getting? So like the great example would be, I live in Augusta, Georgia now. So my kid, you know, going to Georgia Tech is going to be cheaper than going to Clemson now, even though I went to Clemson because Clemson's out of state. And
sure.
Those are all going to be very comparable universities. And so you just got to be careful.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's a great article. Definitely just scratching the surface. These are big decisions, you know, for your family. If you do have questions and you're listening to this, please reach out to us. Let us help you think through this. Even for your personal situation with your income and your goals and your children, this is what we enjoy doing. This is our passion. So please let us help you with that. But that's a great article. Thanks for getting that, Ryan. And we're going to close this week with the prescription of the week. And the prescription is this. Why increase your standard of living as your income increases? Another thought is, you know, let's not commit to increasing your standard of living, but let's increase the standard of giving as you increase your income.
Man.
And this is, you know, this is, it's difficult and it's hard because, you know, we do look around and we see, hey, well, you know, my car is not quite as nice as it was 5 years ago, or maybe I want a pool, or maybe, you know, I want larger vacations or more vacations or, you know, more comforts and different things. And these can be okay. And these can be good gifts, but also, you know, wondering, you know, can we increase our standard of giving as our income increases? This is a question that I don't think we ask often enough.
Yeah.
Ryan, for myself even. But much less for our clients. So I think it's a good question, you know, for our listeners to think through and to really ask and say, man, can I grow in contentment with what I have, with the amount of vacations that we go on? And as I get those raises, can we be more generous with our families, with our communities, with, you know, people in our cities who need help, who may be experiencing homelessness or different situations?
Yeah.
Can we increase our generosity for our city and for the good of our neighbors as we go through life? So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but
that's a great question. I always tell clients, like, you just need to keep that in mind, because as you start, you know, moving into your 30s or 40s, it just ticks up slowly, and sometimes it's a trap. You don't realize that you're getting trapped into keeping up with the Joneses. And I tell clients, hey, once you move to hardwood floors, people don't go back to carpet.
That's
exactly what I tell them. I said, once you open that door, you're not going to go, you know, I want carpet now, like my next house. No, you're going to want a nicer hardwood floor.
Sure.
Once you upgrade a couch, you're not going to go back down to a cheaper couch. And so once you open that door, you just need to be aware of that. And it is a trap, because I fall into it. I'm guilty of it. And I don't have carpet in my house. And I like hardwood floors now.
Right.
I used to have carpet in all of my house.
And we can start to see those things as needs versus wants.
Yeah.
In our lives. So.
And so that's why I just... thinking through contentment. What does that look like for you? How do I become content? Asking those questions with your friends, family, or community, or even your advisor. Hey, how much is enough?
It's a great question. It's going to be our close for this week's edition of Money MD. Tune in next week for moneymd.net to hear more prescriptions for your financial health. Check out our website, moneymd.net, and send us your questions or give us a call at Richard Young Associates at 706-739-0725. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of the week. Children.
general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. None of the information contained in this broadcast is intended by the host to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. All hosts are representatives of Richard Young Associates, a registered investment advisor.